Om Jnanatimadannasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
Hare Krishna. Welcome to everybody who's joined us for another session of hearing and chanting. And we're anticipating the appearance day of Sri Ramachandra coming up very soon in April. And so we're continuing our readings from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where we left off Gopakumar just meeting Sri Ramachandra and the intensity of his feeling and relationship with him. By the guidance of Narada Muni, he's gone to Ayodhya as a means to attain his ultimate goal of going to Goloka Vrindavan and meeting Madan Gopal. So once we finish this, which we may soon, I'm going to move on to the Ramayana so we can continue our marathon reading of the Sri Ramayana all the way up until the appearance day of Sri Ramachandra. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gupika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Gopremanande, Hari Hari Bo. Welcome everyone. So I'm taking up in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, part 2, the glories of Goloka. We're on chapter number 4, starting up at text number 245. If after you have seen the two lotus feet of Sri Ram, your hankering to see your Lord is unappeased, then Ram, whose heart is soft from overflowing compassion, will happily send you to Dwarka. While going there, perform the Lord's Sankirtan, as it has been described, and you will finally see your own dear Lord, whom you have so long desired to see, the charming Sri Krishna Chandra surrounded by the Yadus. Commentary, Narada now further assures Gopakumar that Krishna and Dwarka is the same Madan Gopal he has so long been striving to find. The question is not whether Dwarka is the place to go, but only how to get there as soon as possible. That question Narada also answers here. Gopakumar should perform Sankirtan of Sri Krishna Chandra, loudly and melodiously, singing his names, reciting his glories, and offering him prayers. How to do all this is presented systematically in the Vedic literature, and Gopakumar should not wonder how to recognize his worshipable Lord upon seeing him, because the Lord, the devotee's eternal master, will not keep his glories hidden forever from his dependent. Or alternatively, it may be that Narada is advising Gopakumar to follow the Raghunuga method of devotional service by listening to the dictates of his heart rather than mechanically following the injunctions of scripture. In any case, the Supreme Lord is all-powerful So one way or another, devotees who perform sankirtan of the Lord's names will easily realize all their ambitions. Text 247. Ayodhya, Dwarka, and other such abodes are all regions of Vaikuntha. Surely, therefore, you need not take permission from the Lord of Vaikuntha to leave and go there. Commentary. Kosala, Ayodhya, Dwarka, and other exalted abodes like Lord Jagannath's Purushottam Kshetra all belong to the greater kingdom of Vaikuntha. Since Gopal Kumar is not planning to go outside Vaikuntha, he does not need special permission from Lord Narayan. By his order, I have come here to see you. He knows the movements of everyone's heart, and you should know that from my mouth you have received his order. Commentary. Even though Gopal Kumar's journey would not take him outside Vaikuntha, he may have wanted to confirm with Lord Narayan that this travel was proper. Earlier, however, Lord Narayan had requested Narada, please meet Gopal Kumar in a private place and fulfill all his desires. So Lord Narayan knows the inner workings of everyone's heart. He had known that Gopal Kumar had been dissatisfied even with living in Vaikuntha, and so he had sent Narada to encourage Gopal Kumar to move on. 249. In any case, the Lord has gone somewhere to bestow his favor on one of his great devotees. Since you will be unable to tolerate having to wait for him, now is the best time for you to go. Text 250. Sri Gopal Kumar said, overjoyed at hearing this, I bowed down repeatedly to Sri Naradaji, took his blessings, and set out, remembering his instructions. 251. After traveling a long way, I saw some forest monkeys restlessly jumping here and there and shouting, Ram, Ram! As I proceeded, they gathered around me and tried to grab my flute from my hand. Then I saw some humans who were even more beautiful than the associates of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Commentary. Those monkeys were grabbing at Gopal Kumar's flute either because they could not bear someone's being a devotee of any other lord than Sri Raghunath, or because they were extremely attracted to the flute. After Gopal Kumar walked a short distance with the monkeys, he saw some human associates of Lord Ramachandra. They appeared more beautiful than any other servants of the Lord he had ever seen, including the four-handed residents of Vaikuntha, who were blessed with the perfection of Sarupya, having bodily forms like that of Sri Narayan. 253. Those men, in behavior like the best of civilized persons, could not tolerate my bowing down to them and showing other signs of respect. They brought me to the boundary of their city and through the main gate. 254. There before me I saw Bharata with Shatrughna, seated comfortably with monkeys like Sugriva, Angada, and Jambavan, and surrounded by many handsome men. Thinking Bharata to be Ramachandra, Lord of the Raghus, I recited prayers addressed to that Lord. But Bharata covered his ears and repeatedly forbade me to continue, saying, I am only a servant. 255. Afraid, I stood motionless with joined palms before Lord Bharata. Hanuman then quickly made me leave that place and enter the inner precincts of the city, where I saw the most amazing sight, the Supreme Lord in his form as the best of human beings. He sat comfortably on a royal throne in the best of palaces, a palace full in all charming attractions. Happy and marked with all the signs of a great personage, he seemed somewhat like Lord Narayan. Commentary. Lord Ramachandra's face beamed with satisfaction, and his body showed all the marks of a perfect person that are set forth in Scripture, such as an expansive chest, a neck like a bull's, and mighty arms as broad as the trunk of a shawl tree. His youthfulness, his ornaments, and the exquisite shape of his limbs made him look much like the Lord of Vaikuntha. But certain especially attractive features distinguished him from that Lord. His hand was adorned with a bow. His glances were delightfully modest and humble. Playing the role of a perfect king, he followed all the prescribed rules of religious behavior. Commentary: Lord Ramachandra is even more beautifully attractive than Lord Narayan. He has two arms. He is the best of bowmen. And in his own unique way, he is the best protector of the citizens of his kingdom. He strictly adheres to the Vedic principles of civilized conduct. I was bewildered by the overflowing ecstasy of his darshan, and I fell down before him as if offering prostrate obeisances. My confusion thus robbed me of the supreme benefit of seeing him, but then, by his mercy, I was able to stand up again and see him clearly. Commentary: The personality of Godhead is the supreme goal in all endeavors of human existence. Since even the most sublime endeavor of pure devotion, he is the goal. He awards such devotion to his surrendered devotees. Sri Hanuman left me, pulled back by his own regular service, and in a single jump went to join his Lord. On the left of the Lord, pleasing him with her service, stood his dear counterpart, Sita, and on his other side, his younger brother, Lakshmana. Commentary: Leaving Gopakumar at the very spot where he had fallen to the ground, Hanuman went to the side of Lord Ramachandra by jumping as monkeys generally do. Hanuman was drawn back to his Lord's side by the ecstatic attraction of eternal service. His desire, above all, was to do whatever would give his Lord the most pleasure. Although the sight of Lord Ramachandra is naturally blissful, when he is with his beloved Janaki, with Lakshmana, and with his best servant Hanuman, his beauty increases manyfold, and whoever sees him becomes immersed in the most exceptional ecstasy. This picture of Lord Ramachandra, together with Sita, Lakshmana, and Hanuman, depicts the Supreme Lord in his especially compassionate mood of reciprocating with his intimate servants. Sita Devi, in particular, is the perfectly compatible consort for Lord Ramachandra, and her beauty and other qualities excel even those of the goddess Lakshmi in Vaikuntha. Standing on the left side of the Lord, she displays such pastimes as offering him betel nut to chew. Text 260. Sri Hanuman sometimes stood in front of the Lord, fanning him with excellent white chamras and singing his glories. And sometimes, palms joined, he praised the Lord with wonderful prayers of his own composition. At one moment, he carried a white umbrella. At another, he massaged the Lord's lotus feet. And yet in another, he did several kinds of service all at once. Amazingly, he was not in the least fatigued by all of this. Commentary: Gopakumar saw Hanuman render several services at once, singing Lord Ramachandra's glories, fanning the Lord, reciting famous prayers, massaging his feet, and more. And even such simultaneous expenditures of energy didn't seem to tire Hanuman at all. Overwhelmed by the greatest joy, I bowed down again and again, saying, "All glories, all glories." Then that soft-hearted Lord soothed me fully with the gentle nectar of his supremely impressive words. Commentary: Lord Ramachandra is extremely kind-hearted. His affectionate speech impressed Gopakumar more than anything he had ever heard before. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear son of a cowherd, my best friend, well done, well done. By showing such affection, you have conquered me. Enough with all this exertion. Now just relax. You have made me your dear friend unhappy for so long. Now just relax. You have made me your dear friend unhappy for so long." Commentary: With these words, Lord Ramachandra congratulates Gopakumar for his victorious entrance into Ayodhya. The Lord repeats himself, "Sadhu, sadhu," to tell the extent of his joy. He assumes that the long journey must have been strenuous, so he asks Gopakumar simply to rest a while. And perhaps Gopakumar can remain in Ayodhya for an extended time. In any case, at least he should take a break from offering so many needless dandavats and prayers. These displays of reverence cause pain to the Lord, who considers Gopakumar a close friend. 264. Please get up. All good fortune to you. Give up this formal respect. Dear friend, I am always controlled by such pure love as yours. Commentary. When the Lord saw Gopakumar standing respectfully, the Lord tried to put him at ease by offering blessings. And when Gopakumar still offered obeisances, the Lord told him outright to stop being so formal. I am actually under your control, so how can I be the object of your reverence? 265. Sri Gopakumar said, on the Lord's order, Hanuman then raised me from the ground and brought me by force to where the Lord was resting his sacred lotus feet. Commentary. After all the Lord's entreaties, Gopakumar, helplessly moved by transcendental joy, continued to bow down and pray to the Lord. Sri Raghunath thus had to order Hanuman to stop him physically. It then came to my mind that all my long-cherished desires had borne fruit, beyond what I had ever hoped. And where else could I have reached such perfection? Commentary, being treated so kindly by Lord Raghunath was the fulfillment of all the desires Gopakumar had ever had, and more even than he had ever dreamed of. He had traveled throughout the material and spiritual universes, but he had never been so fully satisfied. I stayed there for some time, as before, in my own dress as a cowherd boy, and the fullness of bliss I tasted overwhelmed me. Commentary. Just as he had served Lord Narayan for some time in Vaikuntha, fanning him and pushing his swing, Gopakumar now served Lord Ramachandra for some time in Ayodhya. But if Gopakumar's intention was to go to Dwarka, why did he stay in Ayodhya? It was because he was enchanted and forgot everything, intoxicated by natural ecstasy at the feet of Lord Ramachandra. 268. I saw the unique pastimes of the divine lion of the Raghus, who was playing the role of a king of kings, acting in strict accord with religious principles. Commentary. In a subtle way, Gopakumar now begins to express the dissatisfaction that will eventually compel him to find an even better abode of the Supreme Lord than Ayodhya. Lord Ramachandra acted just like a pious king of the world, obeying the rules and regulations of the Dharma Shastras. Gopakumar never saw him violate any religious principles. This implies that the Lord was not free to display the highest extreme of compassion for his devotees. 269. But I did not see the unique sweetness I had found within the varied playful pastimes of my worshipable deity's lotus feet, nor did I find his special mercy. Commentary. Because of great respect for Sri Gopal Dev, Gopakumar refers to him here by using the plural phrase Ishtadeva Padanam, referring to his feet rather than speaking his name. Lord Gopal has certain pastimes that Lord Ramachandra doesn't, attracting the universe with the music of his flute and enchanting the gopis in various ways. Moreover, Gopakumar in his private meditations would have very friendly dealings with Madan Gopal, including exchanges of embraces and kisses. In contrast, Gopakumar's relationship with Lord Ramachandra was more formal. 270-71. Thus, even there in Ayodhya, I seemed unhappy. But by hearing from Sri Hanuman the glories of Sri Ramachandra's lotus feet, and by directly seeing Lord Ram myself, I dispelled that mental distress. I imagined Lord Ramachandra to have all the qualities of my own worshipable deity. Commentary. In Ayodhya, Gopakumar only seemed unhappy, shokam iva, apnuvan, Because that apparent sorrow was a product of pure love for the Supreme Lord, it was in fact unalloyed transcendental ecstasy. By hearing Hanuman glorify Lord Ram's humility, simplicity, respectfulness, and other sublime qualities, Gopakumar would be struck with wonder. He would look upon Lord Ramachandra with great love, seeing in him the features and qualities of his own Madan Gopal. By the force of my previous spiritual practices, the land of Raj would impose itself upon my heart. I repeat, by the force of my previous spiritual practices, the land of Raj would impose itself upon my heart, along with a yearning for its special pastimes and mercy. When Sri Hanuman, the best of counselors, would notice this, he would save me by encouraging me with diverse clever arguments. Commentary: Gopakumar's visions of Lord Ramachandra as Lord Gopal would be short-lived, and he would hanker again for the sweet life in Rajabhumi. He would then feel disturbed and think about leaving Ayodhya. Hanuman detected these changes in Gopakumar's mood by the signs of disappointment on his face and would make all endeavors to quote-unquote save Gopakumar by keeping him in Ayodhya. Hanuman, an expert diplomat, knew how to advise Gopakumar in ways he was inclined to accept, so Gopakumar stayed for a long time without deciding to leave. Only Lord Ram could stop this cycle of discontent and appeasement. 274. Finally, Sri Ram, whose heart is tender with unlimited compassion and who knows the mind of everyone in the world, consoled me with words of gentle affection. "Go to Dwarka and be happy," he ordered, and he sent me off at once, together with the chief of the bears. Commentary: had the Lord not personally asked him to go to Dwarka, Gopakumar would never have been able to leave Ayodhya. Lord Ram knew perfectly well that Gopakumar was a worshipper of Sri Madan Gopal, exclusively devoted to that Lord and uniquely qualified to attain him. Furthermore, Lord Ram understood that this was why Gopakumar was never completely satisfied in Ayodhya, even after tasting supreme ecstasy and even after being mercifully counseled by Hanuman. It was apparent that only going to Dwarka would make Gopakumar happy. The Supreme Lord rarely sends someone out of his abode, but this time he did so for the happiness of his devotee. He deputed Sri Jambavan, king of the bears, to accompany Gopakumar on the way to Dwarka. Jambavan, being the grandfather of Samba, Lord Krishna's son, was an appropriate escort. Thus ends the fourth chapter of part two of Srila Sanatana Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrita, entitled Vaikuntha, the Spiritual Kingdom. Well, over too soon, isn't it? I'm going to go back to text number 273. Purva bhyasa vishenayam rajabhumir yada balat satal lilanukam pashapi akramed dridayam mama tada mantri varinhaham alaksha shri hanumata vichitra yukta chaturyai rak yeshash vasya tatrahi. By the force of my previous spiritual practices, the land of Raja would impose itself upon my heart, along with the yearning for its special pastimes and mercy. When Sri Hanuman, the best of counselors, would notice this, he would save me by encouraging me with diverse clever arguments. In his Light of the Bhagavat, Srila Prabhupada writes about how when one takes to the process of devotional service by the mercy of the devotees, by association with pure devotees, one gets the seed of bhakti within one's heart, and when that seed begins to grow, it has its own force by which it compels one in a certain direction to take shelter of Krishna in a very particular way. And it's Krishna's desire for devotees to serve in a particular way, although it appears in the mind of the devotee to be the devotee's own desire. Nonetheless, this is manifest through an intense yearning to be with the Lord in a certain way. And we see here that Gopakumar, as guided by Narada Muni, had come to Ayodhya to meet the most sweet Lord, Ramachandra. But then he was compelled again to go on to Dwarka. And again he's compelled to move on throughout this entire Brihat Bhagavatamrita. We hear of his story moving from one abode to the next until he reaches his final place, which is in Goloka Vrindavan, which is an exact replica of Gokula Vrindavan, and which he attains, incidentally, by going to Gokula Vrindavan and performing Nam Sankirtan. And then he's transported back home, back to his original lord, Madan Gopal, in Goloka. So those who are associating with pure devotees of the Lord and faithfully hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam will develop this natural attraction for hearing about the Lord, and then an intense yearning will develop after one has removed all the obstacles within one's heart that hold one back from a steady devotional service. And after steady devotional service, one begins to get a natural taste for hearing about Krishna, and then an attachment to him in a particular way, which one feels Krishna is mine. And this relationship is very much cherished by the devotee. So this is the natural path of pure devotional service. By associating with pure devotees and hearing about Krishna in their association, this natural flow of love will develop. And by its own force, Prabhupada writes in the light of the Bhagavat, that devotional service has its own power, its own potency. And even if one doesn't want it, one is compelled by Krishna. He's so merciful when we say, "Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindo, Dina Bando Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute." It's hard to conceive of how merciful Krishna is, an unending ocean of compassion with no bottom, unlimited ocean of compassion. And we hear through the descriptions of Sanatan Goswami the kindness that the Lord has for his devotees. In hearing the dealings of Gopakumar with, of Sri Ramachandra with Gopakumar, one's faith increases to know that the Lord is so merciful. Oftentimes, devotees may, while still engaged in the material world by force of momentum, feel forlorn, forsaken. Why am I suffering so much? Is Krishna really kind? Is he really there? But by hearing these specific descriptions of the Lord's dealings with his devotees, and how Lord Ramachandra expresses how he had been unhappy by separation from Gopakumar, and also by hearing, through the general descriptions of Krishna's mood, that he's intimately connected with every living entity in a similar way. Sanitya nitya sambandha prakritischa paraiva sa, says the Sri Brahma Samhita. Every living entity has an eternal kinship with the Lord. And that is a very intimate relationship. So Krishna, Prabhupada writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, 17th Verse, which begins, Srinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. Krishna desires every living entity to go back to Godhead much, much more than every living entity can possibly desire to go back to Godhead. Krishna's desire is more intense for us to come back to him. So that explains why if one simply gives a tiny bit of attention towards going back to Godhead. Then Krishna moves heaven and earth to help that devotee to advance. He makes all arrangements. Of course, the classic verse in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayanti Te. Krishna tells Arjuna and all of us that he's there within the heart of the living entity. He's there within our hearts. And as soon as we show some sincerity in trying to reach him, little earnestness, just one molecule even, then he, Krishna, immediately gives us as much facility as possible so that we can move forward. Uddhava, when praying to Krishna, says, Naivo payantya pachitim kavayasta vesha brahma yushapi kridim ridam udasvaranta yontar bahish tanubritam ashuban badunban acharya chaitya bapusha swagatim vyanakti. Uddhava, in his prayers in the 11th canto, which is a very important canto to read again and again, says to Lord Krishna from his heart that if I had the lifespan of Lord Brahma, I would not be able to sufficiently express my gratitude to you. And the reason is that you guide me on all levels. He says you guide me from within my heart as Chaitya Guru. You appear externally as my Diksha Guru and my Shiksha Gurus. And all of these are your manifestations simply to bring me back to your lotus feet. So there is every opportunity, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, to be optimistic, or every reason, rather, to be optimistic that one will attain this perfection of life as we see Gopakumara's attaining. And this is why he's telling his own story to his disciple, and that's what this book, Brihadbhagavatamrita, is. It's Gopakumara explaining his own story of how he has gone back home, back to Godhead, to this Brahmana, who has also received the mantra but doesn't know what it means or how to properly utilize it. And so Gopakumara tells how he was taken back to Godhead by the power of his own mantra and the guidance of Krishna at every step. So this is meant for us. And these descriptions of Lord Ramachandra given by Sanatan Goswami are so compelling that by hearing them, especially as we get closer to the Ram Navami, we become fully convinced of his compassion, and then we can worship him with wholehearted devotion. And it is that kind of worship on these appearance days of the Lord that brings us to higher and higher levels of devotional service. Gaur Premanande Haribo. I'm really sorry that we ran out of time. Not time, but we finished this book. I started near the end, but we finished it. But we're going to come back to this. We'll definitely come back to the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. In fact, I'm thinking of just sitting down here and reading the whole thing. We'll just stay online, all of us, and not get off until we finish the whole thing. Call everybody and tell them we're not coming out until we're done. I know that the BBT has just republished the Brihat Bhagavatamrita in a paperback version that will be available very, very soon at a very attractive price. So we'd like to spread it all over. And now I'm going to read a little bit from the Ramayana. Of course, it's a very long literature, and we have a couple of summaries here. The last couple of years, we switched back and forth in reading the various versions. So I'm starting off from this Ramayana version, India's Immortal Tale of Adventure, Love, and Wisdom, retold by Krishna Dharma Prabhu. And I'm starting with the prologue. Coursing through the sky in his celestial chariot, Ravana appeared like a blazing comet. His dark body shone with a brilliant aura. From his 10 heads, his reddish eyes darted about, scouring the mountains below. His 20 powerful arms hanging from his huge frame looked like 5-hooded serpents. Seated on a throne of gems, he directed his golden chariot by thought alone, and it moved swiftly over the Himalayan range. The demon was out on his conquests. All around him flew thousands of rakshasas, clutching swords, barbed spears, spiked maces, and iron bludgeons, all of those weapons smeared with blood. Some rakshasas had the heads of tigers, some of donkeys, and some of fierce fiends. Others appeared in their natural forms, large blackish bodies, fearful faces, and tall pointed ears, and rows of sharp fangs, with a mass of red hair on their heads. They wore iron breastplates studded with gems and were adorned with bright gold earrings and other shining ornaments. Surrounding Ravana, they looked like dark clouds with lightning covering the sun. Ravana wished to defeat in battle even the gods themselves. Wanting to establish his supreme power in the universe, he had gone to the higher planets and conquered hosts of Gandharvas and Yakshas, powerful celestial fighters. Now he was returning from his victorious fight with Kuvera, his own brother and the treasurer of the gods. That lordly deity had been made to retreat by Ravana, losing to the demon his wonderful chariot, known in all the worlds as Pushpaka. The fearless Ravana, overlord of all the demons, looked down from the Pushpaka at the forest below. It was a picture of tranquility. Amongst the trees were many verdant clearings covered with varieties of wild shrubs and forest flowers. Crystal waterfalls cascaded onto many colored rocks. Lakes filled with lotuses and swans shone from the mountain plateaus as the hordes of rakshasas soared overhead. Sometimes the demons would see groups of rishis, ascetic Brahmins, who dwelt in those high mountain ranges practicing austerities and worshiping the gods. They would see the columns of smoke rising up amongst the trees from the sacrificial fires tended by the sages. Using their powers of sorcery, the rakshasas dropped down volumes of blood, feces, and urine, defiling the sacrifices. They would then hurl huge boulders and blazing coals, crushing and burning the sages where they sat in meditation. Finally, the demons would themselves descend, howling and roaring. They tore apart the bodies of the rishis, drinking their blood and devouring their flesh. Ravana admired the Pushpaka as it proceeded according to his will. His brother Kuvera would be sorry to lose such a splendid vehicle. It looked more like a city of the gods floating in the air than a chariot. Numerous cat's eye and crystal pillars ran along its sides, supporting golden mansions inlaid with coral. Large floors made entirely of gems stood upon gold statues of lions and tigers. Groves of artificial trees, shining with golden leaves and fruits, surrounded large ponds crowded with white lotuses. In those clear ponds stood ivory elephants and silver goddesses. Networks of pearls and wreaths of celestial flowers hung all over that car. It was encrusted with countless precious stones and emblazoned with gold carvings of wolves, sharks, and fierce bears. Sweeping through the skies, it emitted the sounds of celestial music and the fragrance of the Parijata flower, known only to the gods. As Ravana sat aboard the chariot, gazing around at that magnificent scenery below, he suddenly noticed a lady sitting in meditation. This was most unusual. Women were rarely seen in those mountains. Sometimes the rishis would have their wives with them, but this woman seemed to be entirely alone. Ravana slowed the chariot and moved down to look more closely. Perhaps there were more ascetics nearby. The rakshasas could use a little entertainment, and if this woman was as beautiful as she seemed at first glance, so could he. Ordering the rakshasas to wait in the sky, Ravana himself rose up from the chariot and descended to the ground. He saw the young ascetic girl sitting on a flat piece of soft grassland surrounded by wild flowers. She glowed with a golden beauty. Her limbs were exquisitely formed, and her full breasts were covered by a black deer skin. Ravana could see the contours of her tapering thighs through the thin cloth covering her crossed legs. Dark locks of thickly matted hair hung down to her waist, framing her white-complexioned face. Her red lips moved slightly as she intoned the sacred syllable Om. Her smooth golden arms were bared in front of her as she sat with folded palms, her long curling lashes covering half-closed eyes. Ravana's mind was overpowered by lust. Who was this youthful lady? What was she doing here in such a lonely place? Did she have a protector? Never mind. He would soon deal with that. The forest was no place for such a maiden. She would make an excellent addition to his other consorts. By his mystic power, Ravana assumed a human form and approached the girl. He spoke loudly, disturbing her reverie. O most beautiful maiden! Excuse me. Who are you? Why are you practicing asceticism in this lonely region? To whom do you belong? What fortunate man has you for his wife? The demon was unable to resist the charms of women. As he gazed upon the alluring form of the girl, he was possessed by increasing desire. He laughed and waited for her to reply. The girl fully opened her black eyes and looked at Ravana. Seeing him as a guest in her hermitage, she spoke respectfully, telling him her name. She was Vedavati, the daughter of a powerful sage who was himself a son of the god's preceptor, Brihaspati. Looking down in shyness, she said, I was born as an incarnation of the holy Vedas. My father was sought by numerous gods and other celestial beings who wished to have my hand in marriage. However, none but Vishnu, the lord of all the worlds, can be my spouse. Thus, I am seated here, absorbed in thought of the Lord and awaiting his favor. Vedavati had meditated for thousands of years. Her body, like that of the gods, neither aged nor required any sustenance. She could understand by her own inner vision who Ravana was and what was his intention. In gentle tones, she said that only Vishnu could be her husband. That inconceivable Lord was all-powerful and all-seeing, and she had chosen him alone. She could not belong to anyone else. Ravana should continue on his way as before. Ravana laughed again. He was not going to leave behind this jewel of a woman. Hearing the name of Vishnu, his sworn enemy, only made him all the more determined. The demon's voice boomed like thunder. Your resolution to practice austerity befits only old women, O lady of shapely limbs. Why do you waste your fleeting youth in this way? I am Ravana, lord of the Rakshasas, the very mighty race of demons. Become my wife and live with me in my capital, Lanka, the golden city I forcibly seized from the gods. Who is this Vishnu anyway? Ravana spoke derisively of Vishnu, whom he knew to be the lord of all the gods. The arrogant demon cared nothing for any universal authority. He had been granted boons by Brahma, the creator of the universe, who had so blessed the Rakshasas that he could not be killed by practically any created being, neither god nor demon. Ravana could assume forms at will. Vedavati's mention of Vishnu did not bother him in the least. He stood smiling before the maiden, his eyes full of lust. Hearing Ravana deride Vishnu, Vedavati flared up with anger and rebuked the demon. She told him to leave immediately for his own good, lest he incite the powerful anger of that supreme deity. Ravana smiled. This high-spirited woman would make a perfect consort for him. He stepped forward and grabbed hold of her long locks. Vedavati at once uttered a powerful Sanskrit mantra, which momentarily checked the demon's advance. She lifted a hand and by her mystic power cut through her hair. The Rakshasa fell back in surprise as she spoke furiously. O evil one, I shall now quit this body defiled by your touch. As I have been insulted by you, I shall take birth again only for your destruction. appearing from the earth, I shall become the pious daughter of a virtuous man. You and your entire race will be destroyed as a result of that birth." Vedavati closed her eyes and meditated on Vishnu, seeing him within her heart. Before Ravana's eyes, she invoked fire from within herself. Her body was immediately consumed by flames, and in a few moments, Ravana stood looking at her ashes. Baffled by her words, the disappointed demon rose again to his chariot and continued on his way. The demon and his Rakshasa followers spent some time in the Himalayan mountains, wreaking havoc amongst the many ascetics living there. Gradually, they approached the far northern region where there lay Mount Kailash, the abode of Shiva. As the Pushpaka began crossing that mountain, it was suddenly brought to a halt. Ravana was surprised, and he descended to the ground, surrounded by his ministers who accompanied him on the chariot. As he gazed around at the brilliant scenery on the mountainside, he saw a strange being with a monkey's head. The creature appeared dreadful, with a dark yellowish complexion and misshapen features. Although his body was large, he had a dwarfish stature. He was clean-shaven and muscular, and he stood holding a large glowing pike. As he gazed at Ravana, the demon called out to him, "Who are you, and where is this region? Why have I been impeded?" "I am Nandi, the servant of Shiva," replied the unusual being. "You have arrived at Shiva's abode, which is inaccessible to all created beings. You will not be able to pass this mountain. Therefore, turn back and go back the way you've come." Ravana looked at the strange body of Nandi and laughed out loud. He spoke in a derisory voice, "Why should I heed you, O monkey-faced one? Who is this Shiva anyway?" Hearing his master insulted, infuriated Nandi. Raising his pike, which shot forth tongues of fire, he exclaimed, "O Rakshasa, I should kill you at once, but I will not do so, as you already stand killed by your own sins. But I say this, as you disregard me in my monkey form, there shall be born on earth many monkeys of terrible strength who will annihilate your race." As Nandi spoke, the sound of heavenly drums reverberated in the sky, and a shower of flowers fell. Ravana's eyes flamed in anger. Disregarding the curse, he roared, "I shall remove this hill from my path. What do I care for you and your master?" The Rakshasa immediately plunged his 20 massive arms deep into the side of the hill. He began tearing it up, and it slowly rose above the earth, shaking violently. As the hill shook, Shiva's consort, Parvati, slipped from her position and clung to her husband. Shiva reassured her, "Do not be afraid. This is the action of the vain demon Ravana. I shall deal with him shortly. He cannot harm you." Parvati's eyes turned red as she replied to her powerful husband, "As this wretch has frightened a woman by his violence, his death shall be caused by a woman." Shiva stood up and pressed down upon the hill with his toe. Ravana at once felt an unbearable pressure. His arms, which resembled huge pillars holding the hill, were crushed. He let out a tremendous cry that resounded throughout the three worlds of heaven, earth, and hell, terrifying all beings. He was trapped by the weight of the mountain and could not move. The Rakshasa's ministers at once surrounded him and advised him to appease Shiva. "We have heard how that all-powerful one is easily pleased. Offer him prayers and seek his compassion at once. Surely he will be gracious to you." Ravana, who had made a study of all the scriptures, began reciting hymns from the Samaveda in glorification of Shiva. But even after 100 years had passed, the Rakshasa still remained trapped. Although in great pain, he continued offering prayers to Shiva. Finally, Shiva relented and relieved Ravana of the pressure. He appeared before the demon and spoke kindly, "O ten-headed one, your prayers have pleased me. Do not be so rash again. Leave now and go wherever you like." Ravana bowed to the god, who stood holding his famous trident. The crescent moon shone from his head, and a large serpent was coiled around his blue neck. He gazed at Ravana with his three eyes as the demon folded his palms to address him. "My lord, If you are actually pleased with me, then please give me your weapon." Shiva smiled. Ravana's lust for battle would prove to be his destruction before long. Saying, "So be it," Shiva raised his palm in benediction and immediately vanished from that spot. Ravana felt the mantras for invoking Shiva's powerful Pashupata weapon appear within his mind. He smiled. Who could resist such power? Even he had been unable to overcome Shiva. The great deity was surely worthy of his worship. Ravana mounted the Pushpaka, which had waited in the sky all the time he was trapped. Being unable to proceed further to the north, he turned back southwards, still accompanied by his numerous Rakshasa forces. As he moved across the earth, seeking further martial engagements, he came upon the city of Ayodhya. This was the capital of the world of humans. The emperor of the earth dwelt there, and Ravana considered him as fit for a fight. If he conquered this king, then the whole earth would be subjugated. Ravana had little interest in human affairs. The Rakshasas were a superior race of beings, more on the level with the gods, but the demon wanted to establish his supremacy over all beings. His army of Rakshasas surrounded the city, challenging the emperor to battle. A fierce fight ensued between the two armies of Ravana and the Ayodhya king, Anaranya. A fierce battle ensued between the two armies of Ravana and the Ayodhya king, Anaranya. Tens of thousands of chariots and elephants came onto the battlefield, along with hundreds of thousands of foot soldiers. Showers of arrows, like swarms of black bees, fell upon the demons. Anaranya's army threw lances, darts, steel bullets, and iron maces by the millions. They swept toward the enemy, shouting courageously with their weapons raised. Ravana's forces used sorcery to appear and disappear at will, flying in the sky and hurling down rocks and sharp weapons. The king's army replied with showers of swift and deadly arrows. Using powerful catapults, the warriors threw at the Rakshasas large iron darts, which whistled through the air. But Anaranya's fighters could not easily engage with the elusive demons. Although they rushed forward, slashing at the enemy with their blue steel swords, the soldiers found themselves cleaving the air as the Rakshasas rose into the sky. The Rakshasas, who towered over their human foes, would then suddenly descend behind the soldiers, cutting them down with razor-sharp scimitars. Gradually, the demons overpowered the king's army. The battlefield became strewn with the mangled bodies of Anaranya's troops. Blood flowed in waves upon the ground. Heads rolled on the earth with their golden earrings flashing and their teeth clenched in fury. Large and well-muscled arms, still clutching broad swords and lances, lay severed amidst the entrails of slain warriors. The demons sent up great shouts as they hacked down the king's army. Anaranya himself exhibited great prowess. He knew the secrets of the celestial weapons, and by invoking those divine missiles, he killed innumerable Rakshasas. When the demons hid using their sorcery, he released the Shabda weapon of sound, which found them wherever they were. As hordes of Rakshasas rushed at the emperor, he let go the wind weapon, which lifted the demons and hurled them far away. Anaranya was difficult to look upon as he stood in his chariot releasing his weapons. They fell upon the Rakshasa forces like blazing meteors, but the demons far outnumbered the humans. Although hard-pressed by the king, the Rakshasas responded with more and more sorcery, vanishing into the sky and entering the earth. Eventually, Ravana's hordes completely annihilated their enemies, and Anaranya stood alone against the demons. Seeing all his forces consumed like so many moths entering a fire, the emperor became infuriated. He went towards Ravana, who had stood by in a war chariot as his Rakshasas fought with the soldiers. Anaranya took up his great bow and let loose 800 fierce arrows, which sped like flames of fire toward Ravana. by the incantations of Anaranya, whose arrows were imbued with the power of thunderbolts. The king fired them so swiftly that they flew in a long line, almost end to end. They struck Ravana furiously on his heads and chest, sounding like claps of thunder. But the demon did not flinch in the least. Angered by the king's sudden attack, Ravana took up a terrible-looking mace. He whirled it above his head with such force that it glowed bright orange and threw off tongues of fire. He flew with the speed of a tempest toward the emperor and struck him a great blow on his forehead. The king fell from his chariot and lay bleeding on the ground. The Rakshasa began laughing and deriding the fallen monarch. "What is the use of fighting with Ravana? There is none who can face me in battle and remain alive. Clearly, you are a foolish man, too much addicted to wine and women. Thus you have not heard of my unassailable power." Ravana continued insulting the dying king, mocking his ancestral line, in which the earth's emperors had appeared for thousands of years. Anaranya looked up at the demon with eyes red from anger. Gasping for breath as his life slipped away, he spoke with difficulty. "I have not been killed by you, O vile Rakshasa. Death is certain and comes to all beings according to their destiny. None can be killed before their fate decrees, nor can any be saved when their time has arrived. I am thus killed by my own fate. Do not indulge in self-praise, Ravana, for your own death will soon come." That's a good place to stop, with those words ringing in our ears, that the self-realized souls live their lives to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depend on Him for everything, not concerning themselves, as Krishna says in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, even for the appropriate time to leave the world. They go on with their service to Krishna and depend on His mercy. And they know that whatever time it comes, because of their full contribution to the process of devotional service, they will be protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, every day of our very important human lives can be properly utilized by remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has manifested this material world simply to give mercy to all the souls, and He extends Himself in unlimited ways through which anyone can take advantage and then in a very short amount of time go back home, back to Godhead. So one of the best ways to do that is to remember the Lord on His divine appearance days. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata, chakva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna." One who has an inkling for the true nature of the Lord and His appearance in this world doesn't take birth again in the material world. Just by having that intimate knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of everything, and that He's all-merciful, and that we have an eternal relationship with Him, that we have an eternal relationship with Him, is completely liberates the soul from this material world. So that can be achieved by hearing again and again about the appearance of the Lord in this world. So we are using our days leading up to the appearance day of Ramachandra to remember His pastimes, and we will continue reading from the Ramayana nonstop. Well, we will stop in between, but I mean consecutive days to finish this reading of Sri Ramayana by the appearance day of Lord Ram. And I thank all of you for joining us tonight for this broadcast. Hare Krishna.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.